Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and this week I got the chance to sit down with Christian Truter, the captain of the 106.7-meter sailing yacht Black Pearl. I caught up with Christian in Sabats, where Black Pearl was anchored, watching some of the spectacular racing during the Sabats Bucket. I had a good look aboard her extraordinary ornate interiors. Check out the video on Boat International's Instagram for an exclusive sneak peek of some of the amazing spaces on the boat. And I managed to tear Christian away from his duties on board as captain and question him about his experiences of running such a big sailing yacht and some of the amazing things in store for Black Pearl. So without further ado, here is my interview with Christian Truter. CT, thanks for sitting down with me in the, well, it's quite spectacular owner's office of Black Pearl.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And after a nice lunch as well. Yeah. Nice to sit up here.
I mean, this is genuinely a spectacular space. And I think that because the interiors of Black Pearl haven't really been exposed terribly much, but I think when people see them, they'll just be blown away by how ornate and beautiful and considered they are.
Yeah. Well, we weren't allowed to show the interiors of the boat until December last year. So when we went to the Antigua Boat Show, the only pictures that had been shown of the interior were basically iPhone photos. And I think when we opened the boat up in December and showed brokers around the vessel, everyone was, I think the common comment that I got was the boat is so much better in the flesh than we thought it would be after looking at the photographs. So following on from that, we got some professional photography done to give to all of those brokers and to put out to the world. But still the comment is, like today walking around with you guys, the comment is, you know, when we walk through, she's so much better in person than in the photograph, which is obviously, when you live here, you see it, but it's hard to put across.
That main saloon is jaw-dropping, just the amount of volume in that one space.
Well, before we had furniture in there, it was like an indoor soccer pitch.
I bet, yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, it's a monstrous space. And also the deckhead's so high, like we stand here, I can jump and I can't touch the deckhead.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you're right, actually.
It's 3+ meters in here.
Yes. Just phenomenal. And I love it. And the point of this space, I remember Derek telling me previously, so the owner could sit at his office and almost look all the way.
Well, if you sit in the, where the pool is, if you sit in the veranda where the pool is and you have all of the doors open, you can see the ship here from the night lounge. So, I mean, sorry, from the veranda the whole way along. And it's a 75-meter eye line or something like that. It's an extremely long way.
That is pretty special.
Yeah. Especially on most boats, you don't get that. Yeah, that amount of distance you can see in a straight line. His idea was that he could sit down there and eat breakfast and look all the way up here to the office.
Wow. Well, why don't we rewind kind of to the beginning of the Black Pearl story? So you didn't do the whole build. You joined towards the end of the build.
Yeah. No, I did not do the whole build. So I got brought in when the boat had come out of Ocean Co.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of development still going on. There's a lot of builds still going on. And I came in. So I talked to Chris Gartner. I came in and joined as the chief officer / second captain. And it was document writing time, SOP writing time, SMS writing time.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah. I sat up there in an office at the Fruit Wharf in Rotterdam for quite a while writing documents for the boat. So, yeah.
And what was it about the program that obviously you'd worked with Chris Gartner, former captain of Maltese Falcon, and various other boats before. Was it Chris kind of said, CT, come and join the program? Or
I'm passionate about the dyna rig.
Yeah.
So before it was the dyna rig, it was a Falcon rig. I did the build of Maltese Falcon and I worked on Falcon as the rig master for 3 years, I think, at that stage. And I felt like when I went there, my whole maritime career up until that point had led me to that boat and that technology. And it was like a perfect job for me. Like I loved it dearly. And so when this came up, I mean, Chris and I we've been friends for years. We were having a conversation and, you know, he's like, well, you know, you're the logical person to come and participate in this. So
it was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, I was proud to be asked to come in, but it seemed like a logical, like for me, it was a logical step, particularly with the rig technology. But I'm a true believer. So it's easy. I can give my passion to it. I'm like, right, let's make this work. Let's fix these problems. Let's go. And I want to show it to people as well. So,
and the passion for the rig was born through your long partnership with Tom Perkins.
Yes, exactly.
So you worked on Dr. No and various other...
Well, I started with Tom on Mariette in early days. It was my first actual yachting job, was on Mariette, and that's when I met Tom. And the rest is of yachting is a history. But that was 23-odd years ago.
So can you remember when Tom started first talking about the Dynarig project? And
I remember when it might have been, it was here. It was in St. Bart's. And it was, I think, for the bucket in 2002 or 2003.
Yeah.
And there were plans for the Maltese Falcon. So Chris wasn't on Mariette at that stage. He'd gone to the Maltese Falcon project. And Tom laid out plans after racing one day. And he put them out on the, put them on the table. And Jerry Dykstra was there, all the old, everyone who was involved was there and looking at this great new project. And I sort of remember looking over the top of their shoulders on Atlantide one evening after racing, going, that's pretty interesting. And that was it. And after, shortly thereafter, Tom said, oh yeah, you'll come and work on this boat one day.
Yeah. Well, it must have been a pretty special moment, because in the kind of the world of innovation in super yachting, that was one of the kind of the most seminal moments in rig development, really, ever. I mean, the Dynarig concept was sensational. It took a true believer to run the boat. It took a true believer to build the boat. I mean, Tom was a visionary in that way.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's proved itself. It does work. I mean, it's surprising that it's taken this long. I mean, Maltese was launched in 2006, nearly 20 years ago.
Mm.
And it's taken this long, but there is now adoption. So, just speaking to the guys from Dykstra this afternoon, and the list of boats that are now in build, which are Dynarigs, is long. I think we had six boats that are on the cards that are going to being made, and others that are in the pipeline. But it's happened now, and the thing is, it works. I mean, yeah. We were talking about statistics earlier. In some points of sale, it's not as efficient as a conventional rig, but in many points of sale, it's more efficient. But it's also cost effective. The cost of the sails themselves is relatively small. The fuel efficiency, like we had that conversation earlier, is amazing. The amount of time sailed. We're a 100-meter boat, and we've sailed 80% of the miles that we've traveled.
Yeah, that's an incredible
statistic. Yeah, it's amazing. And the fuel saving, you think about how much fuel a 100-meter boat burns to cross an ocean. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to do the Atlantic three times on this boat, and each time has been 80% sailed, and we're getting across, burning minimal fuel. Like, we're basically powering generators and sailing, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when you walk around the interiors and you look at it, because you go, oh, yeah. Cavernous ceilings and, French antiques. And
There's a lot on this boat.
Yeah, exactly. But it works.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And I can't wait for people to see the pictures, because I think they're going to kind of filter out into the world now, social media, channel media.
You'll have to do a boat international piece.
We'll definitely do a boat international piece. Don't worry about that. Yeah. So, it's exciting that we can kind of help expose the boat a bit and tell a bit of its story, because, like you said, until now, it's been kind of a...
One of the things that's exciting about the whole having the boat go to charter is... People are skeptical of new ideas. I mean, not that it's a new idea anymore, but it hasn't been exposed to that many people. I mean, a lot of people have chartered Maltese Falcon. So there's a bunch of people who've been on there. They've seen it. They understand it. They know it works. They know it can sail. But what I really love, and back in the Maltese Falcon days as well, was when you get someone on board who may have been slightly skeptical, and that first moment when you set the sails and the boat starts moving and then the boat starts heeling over and then you're going, and the smile and that childish excitement that goes on. I love that moment.
That is a cool moment. I think everyone in the world of yachting wants to see the side-by-side kind of photo or a match race or something like that between Black Pearl and Maltese Falcon. I mean, hopefully it will happen sooner rather than later.
I think I think hopefully this year. I think if Maltese is chartering in the Med and we're sailing and chartering in the Med, we'll end up in the same place at the same time. And we'll definitely do some sailing together and see if we can get some good footage of that.
That would be absolutely magic. Yeah. It's kind of the picture of the world, the world's been waiting for.
The boats were next to each other. I remember at one point in Montenegro, and there's some drone footage of the two boats there, but they weren't sailing together. So, having the side-by-side will be amazing.
And just because you've sailed, you've captained both boats.
I haven't been the captain of Maltese. I was never the captain of Maltese.
Okay. But serving in a very, very senior position on Maltese.
Yeah, I did the rig master job on there. A lot of it was to do with development of sails and problem solving, the rigs during the build process and, that side of things.
And so how much better a sailing boat is Black Pearl compared to Maltese Falcon?
That's a political question. We're just going to have to sail them next to each other and find out. How much better is... Well, look, they're very... This hull is designed to sail and is designed for these rigs. And that wasn't the case specifically with Maltese. She was adapted to the rigs. She did a great job. We sailed, you know, I sailed tens of thousands of miles on her. And since then she has sailed, God, I wonder how many, but it'd be hundreds. She must have, you know, since 2006, she has sailed probably hundreds of thousands of, or at least 100,000 miles, and is a groundbreaking, you know, vision that has worked really well. This is another step. You know, someone took this and went, you know, on paper, draw the boat. So yeah, it's you don't compare what goes before with what goes after, because they weren't created at the same time with the same idea. One followed on from the other.
Yeah.
That's a political way of answering that.
That's a very political way. Well done, CP.
I love them both.
Yeah. And one of the big differences, the rigs are electrically controlled.
Yes, yeah, big difference.
Black coal, hydraulic on Maltese Falcon. Yeah. So maneuvers obviously take a lot longer.
It's much faster. The rotation on here is much faster.
Yeah.
And also you can, I mean, you've got control over that. You can change the frequency. You can increase the speed or decrease the speed to save power. But yeah, it's like particularly things like tacking maneuvers. You know, we tack much faster than Maltese.
And one of the old comments about Maltese Falcon was it was kind of push button sailing. I mean, the control center, your bridge up there. I mean, is it how much time are you actually on the helm, or is it how involved is the tacking process? I mean, it is. It's obviously a bit more involved than just pushing a button.
Two people can sail the boat.
Wow.
We can sit up there and sail with two people. The thing is, the thing that doesn't describe is the maintenance time.
Yeah.
But I have had days where we've picked up the anchor at 6 a.m. and we have rotated on the anchor. I've had one person, I've had two people picking up the anchor, a chief engineer in the engine room, another person in the bridge with me. We've picked up, we've turned, rotated the boat, we've set sails, we've put away the thrusters, and we're in full sail in 6 minutes and doing, you know, 15 knots. It didn't take 20 people, it took two people. So yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, the thing is, it's a it's an efficient way to drive a 100-meter super yacht.
Yeah, like to your point earlier, it has taken quite a long time for people to really get behind the idea, apart from a couple, obviously, Tom and the owner of Black Pearl, to really invest in the concept. But now there does seem to be some more momentum. Yeah. And largely thanks to Black Pearl, frankly. I mean, the more people see this boat and the more people see it sailing, the more people realize that it makes a lot of sense to have Dynarig.
Yeah, I think with Maltese, it was the first.
Yeah.
So people go, oh, it's a singular object. Obviously, when Black Pearl comes along, it's no longer a singular object.
Yes.
Oh, it's been done again. Oh, it works. It still works. Ah, okay. They see it. I mean, unfortunately, COVID happened. You know, unfortunately, you know, many things happened because we probably would have got out and about a lot sooner. But now people see it. People see it work. You know, we sailed when we came here in 2000. We came to St. Bart's in 2022. Sorry, it was 2023 because we arrived on the 2nd of January. And we sailed through this anchorage.
Yeah, I remember you telling me you sailed through the anchorage.
Chris Gartner was on board.
Yeah.
Derek was on board. And I remember we got here. We got up. I was in my bunk and I said, I drew a line on the chart and said, wake me up. You know, give me a call at this point. And they got to the point and they called me and I was like, what time is it? No, it's too early. Just jibe for an hour. So we just sat up there and jibe for an hour. I was like, I'm going in daylight. And then I came off and went, all right, let's go. And we sailed down to the side of the island, set everything. And we sailed through this anchorage through... You know, Olivier was 30 meters one way, so other boats at 30 meters the other way. We sailed through the anchorage at 15 knots at 7:30 in the morning, all the way to the other end of the anchorage, did a jibe around a boat, sailed back through the anchorage, past Panda Souk, like, but bore away, dropped all the sails and anchored. We were like, right, that's it. We've arrived. one of my best days in yachting was great.
You've had a few good days. I mean, you've been involved in some amazing projects. I mean, you were saying earlier that you almost, it's not that you fell into yachting, but you started ocean racing and then you got the super yacht job on Mariette with Tom, and that changed the course of your whole career.
Yeah, I got into yachting, but I mean, I told this story the other day, it was a bit of an accident, really. I love sailing, always loved the ocean, but I never thought I'd get into, never thought I'd end up on super yachts. I loved sailing. I started out as a teenager. One of my good friends' fathers had a 42-foot Choi Lee ketch. And as 12-year-olds, Jack would take us out on the ketch up around Newcastle in Australia. and we'd go sailing. And by the time we were 14, he just gave us the keys to the boat.
Wow.
So we'd go sailing. We'd go bombing around pretending we were pirates. But we never, you know, it was never a career. It was just, that's what you do for fun on the weekend. We're going to take the boat out and go camp off, you know, the back of some island somewhere and go swimming in the ocean. And that's like the dream for two 14-year-old like, boys. We're like, yeah, this is great. And, you know, finished school, went to go to, like, got into university, took a year off from university. And the guy that I went sailing on the Choi Lee Ketch with, when I went traveling for 6 months, I got back to Australia and he was on a square rig sailing ship. And I was just twiddling my thumb, like, you know, literally twiddling my thumbs going, what, you know, I've got to wait for 6 months. And he basically said, oh, you know, come on board the boat for 10 days. We're throwing hydrophones off the continental shelf of the East Coast of Australia to listen to whales. So no money, but you'll get beer and somewhere to sleep. And I went, yeah, great. I spent 4 months on that boat.
Wow.
And that was, yeah, that was my first working on a boat job. And I loved it.
For beer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they did my laundry periodically, which is was also good. But I loved it. And I met some amazing people, like great craftsmen. Like we did some refit stuff on there. You know, we were pulling planks out of this 1922 Baltic trading ship and sailing up and down the coast. And I started getting involved in rigging and all that sort of stuff. And obviously when the call came to go to uni, I was like, yeah, I'm busy. And I moved from that to another square rig ship. And yeah, I spent probably a good part of the next 3 years on square riggers and working with traditional riggers and, you know, doing that sort of thing. I ended up working on the Australian boat, the Endeavour replica, which was like Captain Cook's replica, and sailed around Australia teaching like voyage crew, basically, like sail trainees, how to sail, climb aloft, be safe. And so my whole career started with that sail training background. And I left that and went into yacht racing. Like I ended up on some, you know, doing some maxi stuff on the East Coast of Australia, you know, Sydney, Hobart, sort of that sort of thing, which I love. I love that. Amazing. And the way I got into yachting, and I told this story the other day to someone, when I left the Endeavour, I flew to the States and I ended up on a classic boat, but not a super yacht. Like it was on a classic boat sailing around. A friend of mine, John, who's the guy who I sailed with on the Ketch, who I went on the square rigger with, he'd gone and worked on yachts. Like he'd gone overseas and got a yacht job. I didn't do that. And he dropped this nugget in my head that said, if you want to make some money and you're in the States, go to Fort Lauderdale and go do day work. So I went over and I sailed on this classic boat. You know, there's a whole nother story in that. And I ended up getting a plane ticket. And I went over and sat in the Turks and Caicos for a while and ran out of money. And the place I was going to, back to the East Coast, or sorry, the West Coast of the States, was through Florida. So I went to Fort Lauderdale and I looked for day work, which I absolutely bombed out. I did not succeed at getting day work. I was not the right, I was not clean shaven. I was not tidy. You know, I wasn't yacht stuff.
Yeah.
But I had a commercial captain's ticket at that point, you know, and I was a traditional rigger by trade at that point, but I was not tidy. And so I didn't really succeed, but I ended up, I crossed the 17th Street Bridge one afternoon and there was a boat there, a schooner called Aquarius, which is the old Blom and Voss boat, I think, you know, 182 foot. It was a 3-masted staysail schooner. I'm pretty sure it was.
But okay.
Beautiful boat.
Yeah.
And I went down there because I thought, I recognized it and I thought, I know the person who's the chief officer on there. So I went down there to have a chat and he'd actually left the program. And they were like, oh, you know, why do you want to see Gavin? And I said, actually, to be honest, I've been looking for day work. I've had a terrible time and I wanted a free beer with a friendly face. And they had a look at me and said, come back at 5. So I came back at 5 p.m., had a beer, told my sob story, and I ended up crossing the Atlantic with them. And they put me in touch with Mariette. And then I went to Mariette and that was my first yacht job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then looking back now as the captain of Black Pearl, I mean, it's been quite the career, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's been amazing. It's been wonderful. It's the best industry. I mean, it's create your own adventure.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's great. I'm very proud of this boat. I'm proud of the crew. I'm really proud of the crew on this boat as well.
It seems like a good unit.
Yeah. We have got a good crew and we've got support. You know, we've got great support from management to really form that strong crew. And, you know, even though there has been interesting times for the boat, really, we've still got, you know, we've got that strong group of people who really believe. And I think that's what makes the difference.
I think that's really, that point's really important. You've really got to believe in the technology and the kind of spirit of Black Pearl, really, because she not only was she groundbreaking in her, you know, the rig. There's a lot of innovation on this boat in hydro regeneration.
Yes.
Just the efficiency levels on this boat are considerable, basically. So
Oleg wanted to make a green
yacht.
He wanted to, that was his dream, you know, and he did. He invested money in all kinds of technologies, you know, heat recovery, like sewage treatment, heat recovery, insulation, regeneration. You know, there's so many modes, there's so many drive modes, you know, the megawatt battery installation, like all these things. He wanted to show that you could go sailing on a Pallas and have zero emissions.
Yeah.
And he proved, you know, really the case is proved. We have sailed for significant periods of time cold, no generators. We haven't done a whole ocean cold because you've got to string together, you've got to have remarkable weather, to be honest. But the efficiency, like people go, oh, you haven't done the whole ocean without emissions. But we've done significant portions of it. And overall, the efficiency is extremely good. I mean, I joke, you know, we use a few different fuel brokers, but I joke with some of them and they, you know, they're like, you're the worst client ever. Because you don't burn enough fuel.
Yeah.
You know, tongue in cheek, of course. But yeah, the boat's efficient. I mean, it's when you consider the numbers, we cover big distances and use very small amounts of diesel to do it.
Pallas, that's the right adjective.
Yeah.
I mean, it is palatial, rather.
Yeah.
It is absolutely that.
What's great is, though, it's a Pallas, and when we go sailing, she heels over 15 degrees, and you see water down the side decks, and everything inside is serene, and outside is action stations.
And the point of sailing more than you motor, a lot more than you motor, I mean, that's the spirit of the boat, isn't it? And that comes a lot from your just love of sailing. I mean, why sail? Why motor when you can sail? You got the breeze, you got the rig.
Oh, I think Chris and myself, who are now currently the captains and previous captains before, we both are of the same mind. If you can sail, sail. You know, if you've got the freedom to wait a day for better wind, wait. You know, if you need to go 200 miles north to get into a band of wind and it's not necessarily a straight line to where you want to go to, do it. I mean, I think the crew that work with me know now, and so the same crew that work with Chris, they know if the wind's blowing, we're going sailing. You know, I mean, sometimes obviously commercial pressure, or you've got to be in such and such a place at such and such a time, you don't get to sail. But even if the wind's not great, we still motor sail.
Yeah,
you know, like I mean, I find, you know, you can be motoring along, and I mean, we can push this boat along at nine knots, and we can burn, you know, 175 liters of diesel an hour doing it, which is, it's a minuscule amount. But if I set sails, like if we've got some wind that we can use and we set sails, we can drop that amount to 90 liters an hour, you know, which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's 3,000 tons of boat. And we can do that. So, okay, we're not 100% sailing, but we're doing something. There's a percentage it's improved. But yeah, Chris and I, you know, Derek, same, you know, management, everyone just wants to sail. Yeah.
And that was the spirit of Oleg as well, right?
Yeah, he wanted to sail everywhere.
Yeah.
His modus operandi was, I don't care, just sail.
Yeah.
You know, if you got to go 1,000 miles the wrong way to get there and you just sailed, then perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great story. So, Con, what does the future hold for Black Pearl? I mean, she'll be in the Med this summer.
We are actively trying to get the boat into the charter market.
Yeah.
You know, it's been an interesting... it's an interesting journey for us. The boat was quite specific. You know, Oleg, the boss, was extremely specific. But we've worked, you know, we've discussed with brokers. We've worked on the team to get us to that point. And we're open for charters now. You know, and as I said, the team's extremely proud of the boat. We're really motivated. And we came to Antigua to open the boat up to brokers. I mean, we didn't know we were coming to the Antigua show because we had other things that we were going to do. But our plans changed. So we came at short notice. We prepped the boat on the crossing. We literally arrived and opened the doors, got 200 plus brokers through the boat, did a series of professional photographs, which we've now released to brokerage. And we're just actively pursuing charters for the Mediterranean season.
How's it looking so far?
I think there's a lot of inquiries.
Yeah.
We're at the point now where we need people to sign on the dotted line. And I think they'll find that this is an exceptional experience.
Well, Falcon always charted pretty well.
Falcon charted amazingly well. I mean, I remember the Monaco boat show. when we first, the first year Monaco Boat Show, and the charter books were just full.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone was just had a great time. Loads of repeat charter clients. And Maltese did the Med Caribbean, Pacific, Costa Rica, French Polynesia, San Francisco, back to the, Caribbean, and then chartered, has continued to charter since then. And I believe the new owner is, I don't really know. I'm not in touch with them on a daily basis. I just sort of watch from afar. But I believe they've got a fairly strong charter program going now. I mean, the difference here is, this boat is three times the volume of Maltese. We're 105 meters long, but our GRT is, I think they're 1150-ish, and we're, 2900-ish.
Yeah.
So not quite three times, but I mean, it's massive. But yeah, I think people will really enjoy coming on board. But I think, you've got to have someone who's adventurous, who wants to sail, who wants to sail at nighttime and sail, fast between islands and experience that, but in palatial luxury, because it is, we do meals, and I've done meals on here where you sit down for lunch and we start strapping the boat down during lunch. And by the time lunch is finished, we've got the boat sitting on thrusters and, you walk up there for a coffee on the flybridge, set the sails, and 6 minutes later, like literally 6 minutes later, the boat's full sail set, heeled over 15 degrees, doing 15 knots. Like, transition from lunch to afternoon activities. And then when it's time, when you're done, to put it away, we want to level the boat out. It's heeled over a bit too much. I want a massage. Okay, do you mind if we keep sailing? No problem. Put away half the sails, slow the boat down, heel over 4 degrees, and just keep sailing. You can control it completely. But she's a remarkable boat.
Well, it'd be great to get a charter or two during Sembats. Well, get a charter for next year, Sembats Bucket too, because I think everyone just wants to see. It'd be great to see Black Pearl competing.
Yeah. There's a lot of curiosity. I've been speaking to the OR, the handicappers, obviously, and they're sort of scratching their head trying to figure out how they should handicap us.
Yeah.
So we're going to sail around the island this weekend, but the wrong way probably. So we can see the whole fleet. But I think it'd be great, for someone who wants to sail, again, wants to sail on a big bus, this would be a great charter to do.
What's the rate? Remind me.
I think the Med rate now is, don't quote me on this, I think it's 950 for early season bookings.
Okay.
You should confirm that with...
Oh, well, I'll check with Derek.
Yeah, check with Derek. I think we came in on advice at a higher number, and... we're just trying to find that sweet spot that works for people. I mean, at the end of the day, we'll take advice. We're here to do business. We're not, but until someone actually comes on board for that first charter, you won't know.
What would the general broker reactions, apart from just the awe, like, wow, this is, a sensational interior, amazing boat, rig, tech, all of it. The brokers were pretty positive about their...
Yeah, I mean, brokers are brokers.
Yep.
So, you know what they're saying to you, and then you don't know what they're saying to their clients, and I have all respect for that. It's a business.
Yeah.
But I think the feedback was, people look at it and go, wow, this is pretty incredible. And a lot of people, I think, sent photos and sent things to their clients, and we're waiting for that to percolate out into getting people on the boat.
Oh, we'll hope to.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be amazing. I mean, there's great itineraries to do. If people want to do a trip that involves sailing, like you start a passage like, the Adriatic from, Venice to Montenegro, for example. What a great, great sailing holiday where you can, you have dinner on the Grand Canal in an evening as you slowly, you slowly head out towards Croatia, and then, you're in this empty, empty islands getting busier and busier as you get down towards Dubrovnik and, the beautiful scenery, always good, good wind, and into the fjord of Montenegro, great. Also, the Ionians, like down there, beautiful passage making, great wind. I mean, that's what you want, though. You want to start at one place and sail to somewhere else and finish somewhere else, having had a sailing journey, which I think where this boat excels is, doing some beautiful day passages, but also you can do night passages where you keep the boat fairly level and still sail.
Well, it'd be great to see it in farther flung destinations too, right?
Derek and I were talking about it this morning. You say, what do you think about the Pacific? I'm like, let's go. we were talking.
We'll leave tomorrow.
Oh, that's what I said. I'm like, I'm like, I'm ready. Hand in the air, let's go. But I mean, for me, my best charter experiences have been in far flung places.
Yeah.
And I, I don't look at anywhere and go, that's the milk run and that's the whatever, because you create what you create, where you are at that time. But the scope available in the Pacific is wonderful. And Alaska, what a great spot, you know,
yeah.
Wonderful place, you know, beautiful, you know, and when you take the palace with you, you don't need the restaurant ashore. You don't need the boutique ashore. It's here. You know, it's all perfectly contained. The luxury, the space, it's all there. But the Pacific, for me, it's just, yeah, I love it. You know, atolls, beaches, yeah, paradise. And so far removed from the stresses of, you know, every day. And you go beneath the surface of the ocean, like you go for a scuba dive and it's alive with color. It's a wonderful place. So what we're going to do is string a charter itinerary together, get the buy-ins and go around the world. You know, Indonesia, who wants to do Raja Ampat, you know?
Well, you're halfway home then, aren't you?
That's it.
Yeah, Raja Ampat would be spectacular. Well, I mean, anywhere. I mean, just seeing Black Pearl off some of those atolls in the Pacific.
Sailing through Indonesia, just powered up through the trades, like going through the islands of Indonesia would be amazing.
New Zealand would be great.
Yeah, exactly.
All of it would be great.
Yeah.
But that's the point of this boat, isn't it? I mean, there's nowhere out of reach. I mean, it is.
She is a passage-making machine. Like, just eats ocean miles up.
Yeah, you were describing earlier just how, you know, sailing across the Atlantic just so quickly.
This is a boat. I mean, I'm going to segue back to Tom Perkins' original vision was to take on the great clipper ship records. And this boat is perfectly positioned to go and take on those classic sailing routes, because with the wind abaft the beam, you know, if you've got reinforced trades abaft the beam, this boat eats 350 miles in a day, no problems.
It'd be very cool to do a big passage.
Amazing. Yeah.
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 So you're here for the rest of the week.
Yep.
Then you're back to St. Kitts.
Yeah, we're going to prep the boat for the crossing. So we're here. Yeah, hopefully have a great. We'll sail around the race course hopefully on Sunday. So we can see all, you know, spectate the whole fleet. You know, show everyone. And you know, we'll sail around. They can all see us. We'll see them, which will be really nice.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a few special people that are going to come through the boat in the next couple of days, and then we'll go down to St. Kitts. Looking at going on, I think Monday when the wind is going to be belting, so we'll get down there pretty quickly, and then St. Kitts for a week, prep the boat for passage, lock everything down, you know, put all the furniture away, put all the cushions away, and then Antigua, quick reprovision up to Bermuda, and hopefully get a good weather window out of Bermuda to the Azores, try and do that in record quick time, and then from the Azores into the Mediterranean, and then we'll probably do a quick little maintenance period, you know, tie up to the dock, turn some things off, because we've been out here for a while. And then get into the season.
And the point, because going up to Bermuda is not the obvious choice for lots of people. It should be, because it's a beautiful place.
Obvious
to go.
Choice for me.
Yeah, yeah. But just to kind of fill people in listening, because that fits into the philosophy of the boat, right? Because if you're provisioning out here, you're flying all your stuff out here. It's coming on the boat, so it's not the most efficient way. But if you're leaving here and going to Bermuda, you provision in Bermuda.
Yeah,
and then cross.
Well, I think the thing is also like the. If you get good, lucky, if you're lucky, well, I say lucky with the weather, you can string an Antigua to Gibraltar passage together and sail the whole way. But generally, you're going to sail over the center of a high, which means you're going to end up in pretty light wind, you know, so for days of motoring. If we pick the window going out of Antigua, we should be able to sail most of the way to Bermuda. And if we wait for the weather window out of Bermuda, we should, and I say should, it's not always guaranteed, but in my experience, I've always strung a pretty good passage together in that North Atlantic section. We should get really beautiful days of sailing, and we should be doing 300 plus miles. I mean, sometimes I've come out of Bermuda and it's, you know, I've got to go south because there's too much wind. But the great thing up there is if you go a bit further north, you can tuck into higher pressure and you can, you know, you got more wind available. You're not crossing the middle of the high pressure system. So, which means we can go there burning less fuel. So it's a longer distance, but we'll do it in a more efficient way.
Yeah. So less fuel, more sailing, more efficient provisioning.
Yeah.
I think
we're looking at, you know, we might stop in the Azores as well. And, you know, one of the things we try to do, which is quite difficult. I mean, it's very difficult here, is buy local.
Yeah.
You know, we struggle to do that sometimes. Obviously, the Caribbean is really difficult because there's no one, you know, it's very hard. No one's farming here or much, but we still try. You know, you try to do that. Yeah.
I was just going to say that I think Oleg would be, you know, if he's looking down, he'd be really proud of the program that you're running now. The fact that you're still kind of running the boat per his vision for it.
Yeah, he put something in motion. I think we've kept that flame burning.
Yeah.
But it's because it's a good thing to believe in. You know, there's a beauty and simplicity in sailing and linking together sailing passages.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the salty, tarry square rigger isn't for everyone. And this is a palace like Versailles, but we still are able to string those things together. And it's a synthesis of vision. You can have the luxury of a 100-meter yacht at the same time as, you know, sailing across the oceans of the world. So, yeah, I hope he'd be proud.
Yeah.
You know, he might look at some of the details that we've done. He might get upset about some small things, but I think generally speaking, we've carried the torch. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll continue to. I mean, you're in love with the boat, clearly. I mean, it's so obvious just talking to you about Black Belt. Yeah. You and this boat are kind of fused. You are one almost.
When I sit at my desk a lot, which is one of the terrible consequences of having 42 crew and a 100-meter boat, is you spend a fair amount of time at your desk. But without fail, every time we set sail, I get a six-year-old's grin on my face and I go up the flybridge and push junior crew out of the way. I'm like, you want to drive onto the dock? No problem. You want to drive off the dock? No problem. You want to do the anchoring? No problem. You want to do it? Whatever? No problem. We go sailing. I'm like, all right, let me push some buttons. yeah, I love it. I love it. I get a shit-eating grin on my face every time every time we set full sail and heel over and start moving. It gives me a great, great pleasure, and I feel really proud. Like it's a wonderful thing.
Beautiful.
Great machine.
It is a great machine, yeah. And I can't wait for more people to see it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see. To be honest, I can't wait to see more diner rigs coming out.
Yeah,
and you know, see that adoption. As I said, there's projects in Croatia, there's projects in Australia, there's projects in Northern Europe. Yeah, there's multiple things in the stream, and it'll be really great. Like, I'd love to have imagine getting 3-4 diner rig boats together and just go, you know, have a sailing day.
It's a whole new class.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be great. But it's also commercial applications and all. You know, it's great. Yeah. So, yeah, super proud to be part of it, and, you know, I love it. I am a true believer.
You really are.
Yeah.
Cool. CT, well, thanks very much, mate. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. I hope you enjoyed that insight into what it is like to Captain Black Pearl. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next week.